will not be left alone.
We say to Netanyahu and Joe Biden, come with all the strength and weapons you have, by land, sea, and air. By God, we have prepared fighters who embrace martyrdom as fervently as you cling to life. Victory will be ours.
Demonstrators rejected the Israeli displacement projects and emphasized their absolute faith in Gaza's victory over injustice, pledging to defend Palestine and its nation's sanctities.
Cruelty, savagery, and monstrosity are words that no longer suffice to describe the Israeli criminality. But Syrians completely recognize these crimes, and once again, they confirm their resolute support for Palestine and the resistance. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Hundreds of mud houses of Afghans were demolished in the capital, Islamabad. Afghan refugees lived here for years but now have been told to leave. Hawal Gul's home is one of the mud houses that was also demolished.
We moved to Pakistan during the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. I was born in Pakistan. Tell us what to do, where to go.
Pakistan has said the campaign targets those who don't have any legal documents. But many whose houses were razed to the ground claim they have a refugee status.
The deadline was for the people living here illegally. But people here all have refugee cards. Yet we were not spared. They just came and demolished our houses.
The United Nations and other international organizations have expressed concerns over Pakistan's refugee policy. The Afghan government has asked Pakistan to stop forced deportation of its nationals. But Islamabad defends its policy.
The decision is in exercise of Pakistan's sovereign domestic laws and compliant with applicable international law, norms and principles. It does not apply to individuals who enjoy refugee status who will continue to be generously hosted by Pakistan.
There are over 4 million Afghans living in Pakistan, but almost half of them undocumented. Islamabad says undocumented Afghans are involved in terrorism and other crimes.
Relationship between Afghanistan and Pakistan is already tense over Kabul's refusal to stop cross-border militant attacks. Many believe the crackdown against the undocumented Afghans will further complicate their bilateral ties. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
As the Israeli regime presses ahead with its atrocities, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have held a general strike to express their condemnation. The shutdown brought busy life to a standstill, but protests and demonstrations were already organized all across the main cities. In one of those rallies, protesters marched to the headquarters of the United Nations in Ramallah, demanding an immediate stop to the genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians in Gaza.
These non-stop massacres in Gaza and the latest committed against the Jabalia refugee camp are a failed attempt to weaken the Palestinian resistance and break people's steadfastness. Fighting is continuing and the resistance groups are causing severe losses to the Israeli forces. And our people in the West Bank are also fighting the Israeli military measures and brutality.
We have the same occupation and we are the same people. Geography does not, you know, divide people. We are just the same. We are all targets. Whenever you are a Palestinian, you are a terrorist and you should be killed. People are killed for no reason and for nothing. So, you know, this is complete genocide. This is complete war crimes that should be stopped immediately, right now.
On the other hand, Israeli regime has escalated its military operations and incursions all over the occupied territories. 4 Palestinians were killed on Wednesday. 3 of them were martyred in Jenin during a military raid to the city and its refugee camp, and the 4th was killed in Tul Karim. The Israeli military has also used drones during this recent raid to Jenin. This assault has caused severe damage to a number of buildings and to the alleys. During the funeral procession of the martyrs, identified as fighters from Fatah's Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, mourners vowed to continue fighting and avenge the killing of Palestinians in Gaza and here in the West Bank. So far, 130 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank, and over 2,000 have been wounded. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, almost 1,800 Palestinians were detained during the daily raids. And for the third week, entrances to most Palestinian villages, towns, and cities have been blocked by military checkpoints, earth mounds, cement blocks, and iron gates, preventing movement between them amid an increased Israeli crackdown. Palestinians say the heavy crackdown is meant to prevent them from engaging in different forms of anti-Israel activities. With the escalation of Israel's aggression on Gaza, the regime's military has also been stepping up violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Despite that, Palestinians in the West Bank say they would not back up from supporting their brothers and sisters in the Gaza Strip. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Just 90 minutes before a highly anticipated march across Paris last weekend against Israel's war atrocities in Gaza, local authorities suddenly revoked the permit for the protest. That gave police legal justification to use a tool of political repression not seen since the Yellow Vests: massive fines. Out of perhaps 4,000 people, 1,400 protesters were given fines of 135 euros each. That's a total of nearly 200,000 euros extracted from the pockets of peaceful demonstrators, many of whom did not even know about the last-minute banning of the protest. Some of the fines may be dropped due to the controversial cancellation, but the initial figures were widely relayed by the media. The use of mass fines is the latest example of how France has effectively criminalized public support of Palestine and also silenced dissent against what is widely perceived as one-sided support for Tel Aviv, despite war crimes which have shocked the world.
Ne sont que un des éléments.
We must recall that this is just one element of the French government's absolute support for Israel. We saw Macron recently suggest that the West's anti-ISIL coalition actually be used against the people of Gaza. He also sought a nationwide ban on all pro-Palestinian marches, has constantly waved a false flag of anti-Semitism, tried to ban the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, and on and on.
Demonstrations against Israeli atrocities have effectively been banned nationwide since October 7th, with only two legal protests allowed thus far in the capital. Two protests are planned in Paris later this week, but many say it's difficult to trust that the government will consistently honor the rights to freedom of assembly and freedom of speech when it comes to Palestine. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The spokesperson for Yemen's armed forces has officially confirmed that Yemen has entered the war against Israel. In a televised TV address, General Yahya Sari stated that the Yemeni army launched a series of ballistic missiles and drones that targeted numerous locations in Israel.
Our armed forces launched a large batch of ballistic missiles and a large number of drones at various targets of the Israeli enemy. The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that this operation is the third operation in support of our oppressed brothers in Palestine and confirmed that we will continue to carry out more qualitative strikes with missiles and drones until the Israeli aggression stops.
According to the military spokesperson, the United States, along with some Arab states, have allowed Palestinians in Gaza to suffer daily massacres and a strangling blockade. He condemned these Arab states for refusing to mobilize their armies in order to save Palestinians.
The Arab and Islamic world were supposed to mobilize and protect the children and women of Palestine. This is a moral, Islamic, and humanitarian obligation. In response to this, the Yemeni army had no choice but to answer the call of the Yemeni people and all free people. With our faith in Allah, Yemen's armed forces decided to act now in order to support the Palestinians who are experiencing this historic form of oppression.
The declaration of war leaves Yemen to become the first Arab nation to declare war on Israel since the 1967 war. The 6 days of war ended with Israel expanding its occupation over more Palestinian territories.
Muslims and Arabs across the region are praising the Yemeni army's missile and drone attacks against Israel. The question now is, will other Arab nations take action to try and bring an end to the genocide in Gaza, or will they remain silent? Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
Thousands gathered in the Pakistani capital Islamabad for a massive rally in support of Palestine. All Islamic communities, including Shia and Sunni, came together to voice their strong condemnation of Israel's atrocities in Gaza. Pakistan's religio-political party Jamaat-e-Islami hosted Gaza Million March just a few miles away from the U.S. consulate in Islamabad to condemn Washington's role in supporting Israel's crimes.
Israel is brutally attacking the innocent people. Israel is brutally attacking with phosphorus bombs on the hospitals. And every day they kill 500, 600, even 1,000 children and kids and women and civilians. So there is no justification of such a genocide.
Similar rallies were held in other cities where people voiced their anger on what they call the criminal silence of the world on Israeli bombardment in Gaza that has killed thousands of men, women, and children in recent weeks.
Children have nothing to do with war or with hate. This is implantation of hate within children as well, which is a very bad thing for people in the future. I would request all the leaders of the Muslim nations to rise. This is the time. We don't have enough time. We don't have any more time to rise and become united against all this, against the evil Israel.
The protesters demanded that legal proceedings be launched against Israel in the International Court of Justice for its ongoing crimes against humanity.
It's not a war. It's a proper genocide. It's a proper ethnic cleansing. And it is being followed by war crimes, proper war crimes, which is a crime not only according to Islam, but according to Geneva Convention, according to all the rules of the world. And, you know, this is not acceptable.
The protesters also called on the people of Pakistan to boycott pro-Israeli companies and make donations to the people of Palestine.
The continuous presence of Pakistani citizens at pro-Palestine rallies indicates their steadfast commitment to the Palestinian cause and their strong objection to the actions of the U.S. and its NATO allies who are supporting Israel's deadly strikes on Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Within Iranian parliament's constant diplomatic efforts, a delegation from the National Security Committee of the Iran's parliament met with the Syrian parliament speaker, the Ba'ath Party associate secretary, and Palestinian resistance factions.
Our meeting today was held in participation of representatives from Palestinian factions and a delegation from the National Security Committee in Iran's parliament. The latest field developments in the region, specifically in Gaza, were discussed.
The Iranian delegation confirmed that supporting Palestine is a profound strategic choice, and Iran will always support the resistance, emphasizing that Gaza is fighting for the nation and humanity.
We highly value the pivotal role of the Islamic Republic of Iran and affirm that our people, who are being slaughtered in Gaza, aspire to much greater action than what the Arab countries have undertaken, as they have been either incapable to act or complicit with the Zionist entity.
This message today conveys the firm solidarity of the Iranian people and the Islamic Republic of Iran with the Palestinian people's choices in resistance and the repulsion of the brutal aggression that targets schools and hospitals and kills children. Iran is practically rejecting Israeli aggression.
Mr. Hamoud Asabagh, Speaker of the Syrian Parliament, confirmed that Palestine will always be Syria's guiding principle and central cause. While the Palestinian faction leaders expressed gratitude for Iran and Syria for their crucial role in defeating Israel and reiterated their unwavering loyalty for the resistance front.
The legislative Iranian delegation meets with the Palestinian resistance in Damascus, sending a message to the world that the besieged people in Gaza are not alone and they will have all necessary support to withstand and defeat the Israeli aggression. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
For the third Saturday in a row, pro-Palestine demonstrators packing the streets of central London to condemn the UK government's unequivocal support for Israel.
Our government is cheering this on and it's supporting Israel to carry on with the massacre in Gaza. So we want to try and stop that.
I'm so ashamed of our government that they are sanctioning what I think is just collective murder. And it really, really has got to stop. It's awful.
They should be listening to the protesters and demanding that there's an immediate and complete ceasefire, that humanitarian aid is allowed through.
From Madrid to Milan and beyond, even in Germany, home to one of the largest Muslim communities in the EU, where such protests have been restricted over what was described as anti-Semitism concerns.
Despite government attempts to delegitimize it, support for Palestinians is on the rise, with hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets of central London today to raise awareness of what's happening in Gaza and to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
Public pressure seems to be working. London's Labour mayor has become the latest politician to call for a ceasefire, breaking ranks with his party's leader, Keir Starmer, who said Israel reserved the right to cut all supplies to Gaza. 250 high-ranking lawyers have written an open letter to the government urging it to stop arming Israel.
And they are paying the taxes to kill our brothers, so it's unfair. It's completely unfair.
It should stop. We want ceasefire. We want talking, negotiating, but giving Palestine what it deserves, having been bullied for 50, 60, 70 years.
As the war on Gaza rages on, there is no sign of the emotions letting up or the demands that so many here are making for their leaders to find a political solution to the crisis. Saeed Pourreza, London.
On Saturday, people from across Italy flooded into the streets of central Rome to stage a new rally against Israel's ongoing carnage in the Gaza Strip. More than 20 pro-Palestine demonstrations have been staged in several Italian cities and towns since the start of the conflict on October 7. At Saturday's rally, attended by more than 20,000 people, demonstrators were saying that what Israel has been doing for decades to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank is shameful and outrageous.
It's a war crime. Israel is killing innocent people. It has occupied a land belonging to Palestine.
President Netanyahu.
Unfortunately, Netanyahu is not alone. That's why they are not stopping the war. How many more civilians and children have to be slaughtered?
This is a genocide, and it must be said. They have to stop now.
So far, the Italian government, supported by practically all the mainstream media, has lined up with no care for the onslaught of thousands of civilians and children by Israel.
The double standard on Israel and Palestine is appalling. American imperialism and Zionism deeply influenced the media's approach on the conflict.
The crowd of people at the rally held a march towards St. John's Square, waving hundreds of Palestinian flags and chanting out loud, "Free Palestine."
The United Nations has urged Israel to put an end to its collective punishment of the entire population of the Gaza Strip. A communication blackout caused by Israel's heavy bombing has resulted in the Gaza Strip being unreachable. This makes it even more difficult to obtain information and evidence about international law violations and war crimes being committed against Palestinian civilians.
It is important that the United Nations have condemned Israel's crimes. We are saying that Western countries, including the Italian government, are not credible anymore. They are complicit in the crimes perpetrated by the fascist Netanyahu government.
Many at the rally expressed deep concern over the fate of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians as the Israeli air and ground forces are stepping up operations in the Gaza Strip. Some said that, given the circumstances, the involvement of other countries seems inevitable. Max Civili, Rome.
In the limelight.
A quiet revolution is taking place to incorporate the cost of biodiversity loss into economic planning. It needs researchers to be engaged. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Nature wrote, Earth is at the start of a mass extinction event. Estimates show that species are disappearing at 100 to 1,000 times the rate of naturally occurring extinctions. It will be the sixth such event in Earth's 4.5 billion year history. Unlike the previous five, this one has been precipitated by the actions of one species, humans. The 15th of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, agreed by the United Nations, which Nature is covering in a special series, aims to reverse this looming crisis on land. SDG 15th aims are to protect, restore, and promote sustainable use of terrestrial ecosystems, sustainably manage forest, combat desertification, and halt and reverse land degradation and halt biodiversity loss. Nature continued, as we have already reported in this series, progress towards a similar goal, SDG 14, to protect life below water, is going backwards. SDG 15 is also nowhere near on track. In 2019, the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, IPBES, an organization similar to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, reported that ecological communities on land have lost more than 20% of their original biodiversity, and that millions of terrestrial species are likely to become extinct by 2100. The greatest driver of this loss is conversion of land on an industrial scale for human use, especially by agribusiness and industry. Every year, human activities are costing the world around 100 million hectares of natural land, and about that much forest was lost between 2000 and 2020. There is a small silver lining. The number of countries that are tracking biodiversity as part of their official statistics has been steadily increasing. One of SDG 15's targets. Tracking is necessary, but on its own, it is only a partial answer. A bigger issue is that the cost of environmental damage, such as biodiversity loss, rarely factor into countries' official calculations of income and wealth. If anything, clearing a forest to build housing, grow crops, or construct infrastructure to exploit fossil fuels is considered a net economic gain. An analysis of progress towards the 17 SDGs in 99 lower-income nations, published this year, confirms this. Gains in reducing poverty and improving human welfare have come at a high price to the environment. The current system is weighed towards destruction. not preservation. Now is an important moment to make a quiet revolution louder. For decades, researchers and policymakers have worked painstakingly to integrate environmental indicators more closely with economic ones. Their project, the System of Environmental Economic Accounting, or SEEA, has become the world's standard for measuring nature's contribution to the economy and the impact of economic activity on the environment. It was adopted by the UN in 2012. Was updated in 2021 and is now in use in 92 countries and rising. The SEEA measures the stocks of environmental assets such as a country's forest and mineral resources, along with flows such as the quantity of water consumed by industry. Most countries report these results in satellite accounts, which measure economic sectors that are not considered industries in national accounts. Australia, for instance, publishes a national state of the environmental report every 5 years. Uganda measures how much land is covered by grasslands, woodlands, and commercial farmlands, as well as the extent of suitable habitat for important species, such as she tree and the African cherry. This hard work has paid off. These data, watched and used by researchers and policymakers in conservation-related fields, are now on the radar of those in finance and economic decision-making roles. The UN Statistics Division, based in New York City, is seeking expert comments on the next revision to the System of National Accounts, SNA. This is the international statistical standard used to measure economic activity, consumer and government spending, and investments by businesses. There have been just 3 revisions in the SNA 7-year history. Now, questions about how the SNA can account for environmental sustainability along with well-being are being considered. If the SEEA and the SNA can be linked more closely, this could lead economic policymakers to pay closer attention to biodiversity loss, climate impacts, and other costs. This revision is the chance for researchers and others who care about these issues to have their say. Make no mistake, the cost of failing to account for the environment are high, and they are here now, but they are hidden from our daily lives and concerns. A systematic approach to addressing these trade-offs is not the only answer to achieving the SDGs, but it is necessary. Properly resourcing national statistical offices to coordinate environmental accounts is also essential. Those who make economic policy decisions need to see the environmental wealth that is being whittled away as a direct result of those decisions. Only then do we stand even a remote chance of halting the 6th mass extinction event.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. The Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, has warned that all options are on the table should the Israelis think of attacking Lebanon. He says a prime goal of the resistance is ending the Israeli onslaught on Gaza and to ensure the victory of the resistance front. He also said Israel cannot achieve its stated goals against the resistance and the final victory belongs to Palestinians. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have Julia Kassam, journalist and political analyst, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And we also have journalist and political analyst, Elijah Magnier, who's joining us from Brussels. Welcome to the program. To our guests, let's start off with Ms. Kassam in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Give us your thoughts initially on the comments made by leader of Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, regarding the level of involvement of the Lebanese resistance front if this war continues. In his own words, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said all options are on the table.
So this speech cleared up a lot of misconceptions. It cleared up misconceptions that Nasrallah's speech was supposed to be this green light for an all-out involvement into a regional war that would explode into a World War III type scenario, which is what some people were expecting. But Nasrallah directly addressed this. Nasrallah reaffirmed that Hamas is the lead of in this latest operation that began October 7th. And basically reaffirmed that while there is coordination amongst all arms of the resistance axis, the Palestinian resistance acted independently, just as he had reaffirmed in past speeches that the Lebanese resistance acts independently according to their own conditions, circumstances, independent of Iran, again debunking the allegations made in Western media. Days after the October 7th operation in taking initiative in provoking the October 7th operation. No, he affirmed that this was entirely independent. However, he did say that if American provocation should extend, if the assault on Gaza continues, and if the Hezbollah, the Lebanese resistance, is needed, or if the territorial and the political integrity of Lebanon is threatened by the Zionist entity to that extent, they would intervene. But again, this is at this would be at the request of the Palestinian resistance, which already has a great hand on the situation. So again, that was emphasized that the Hezbollah's involvement is conditional upon the position of the Palestinian resistance, which is already doing huge progress on the ground, and the Zionist entity is unable to match it. Nasrallah's warnings, though, that all options on the table were directed more at the Americans who have materially enabled the genocide and the assault on Gaza to continue and to get to the extent where we have over 9,000 civilian casualties. Again, because the Zionist entity cannot match up to Hamas on the battlefield, they've resorted to massacres after massacre of civilians. With American reinforcement and backing, which Israel could not continue and cannot carry out alone. So Nasrallah sent a strong message in that regard. If you keep on, if the Americans keep on wanting to provoke while at the same time trying to tell Hezbollah to stay out of it, warned Nasrallah to not make any escalations. They are prepared, and this would be the existential complete end of the Zionist entity.
Let's bring in Elijah Magnier on the discussion as well. Mr. Magnier, give us your thoughts on the recent statement made by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. One part of his statement was directed at the United States. He said that if conflict erupts in the region, the U.S. will be the biggest loser. Its Navy, its forces, its interests will pay the price.
Thank you for having me. Above all, it is important to say that no country wages war on another, or even on a small group like Hamas and the Palestinian resistance, without the full support financially and militarily. Even Israel, with all its military might, ran to the United States to seek support. And this is where Joe Biden said, we're sending our carriers. They are allocating $14 billion to Israel because its economy is in tatters. And also, they're sending ammunition through a bridge that going through Europe and to Israel to make sure that they can continue bombing the civilians in Gaza. Therefore, it makes the United States the first responsible, not only partner, but it is the first responsible for the war in Gaza and again the killing of the civilians. Moreover, when the Americans threatened or announced that they are sending carrier to the Middle East, the axis of the resistance in Iraq and Syria immediately responded, even less than an hour, by bombing the U.S. bases in Syria, in Conico, Shadadi, and in Iraq, and al-Assad military base, to say that we really don't care about all your support to Israel, and we are going to do what we must do in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. Therefore, the threat against the Americans, particularly when Sayyid Nasrallah said, we have prepared for you, he was referring to the surface-to-surface missile that we know Israel in many occasions raised of having to for the initial objective to close the harbor of Ashdod and Haifa in a case of war with Israel. Now, as the carrier are in the Mediterranean, however, the Americans don't want to be involved directly in a war with Hezbollah, they have decided to be involved with the Israelis in Gaza without attacking Hezbollah in Lebanon. And what they are doing, they are limiting their attacks in Syria because the Syrian president decided not to respond. But they're not doing it in Iraq for fear of the reaction of the Iraqi resistance. And they're not doing it against Hezbollah because they know the capability, the military capability of Hezbollah in case the decision to retaliate against the Americans and the Israelis. And Sayyid Nasrallah said something extremely important that I think it has escaped to so many people. When he said, those who attacked you in 1982 are still their children and their grandchildren alive. Now, he is here referring to something very specific, and he was reading it out of a paper in front of him. So it means he deliberately say that. And his message is, in 1982, those who are today in Hezbollah, so he is taking the responsibility of attacking the Marines and the U.S. Embassy. And there are Marines in Lebanon, and there is a U.S. Embassy in Lebanon. So if ever the Americans want to decide to attack Hezbollah in Lebanon, there are going to be a retaliation like in 1982 when the Americans were pushed out of Lebanon and were pushed to flee the country.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines. featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Mr. Magnea, one of the key points that came out came up in the speech by Hassan Nasrallah was that talking about the operations, the Al-Aqsa flood, which started on October the 7th. He said that the operations will have a great impact on the future of the Israeli regime. Now, many experts pointed out the enhanced capabilities of the resistance front. And the resistance forces based in Gaza after the operations were carried out. So basically, do you think that the Israelis will now start to feel less and less secure after these events?
Well, there are many dimensions to that sentence. First of all, Hamas and the Palestinian resistance have created a state of uncertainty in Israel among the settlers. That is equivalent to several atomic bombs. And why I'm saying that is because 120,000 settlers were dislocated from the settlement around the Gaza, in the Gaza envelope. So it's around Gaza within 20 to 40 kilometers. Because first, they feel they're not safe. Secondly, they feel the army can no longer protect them. Second, they feel the government can no longer offer them security. Now, that is detrimental for the Israeli settlers who came from all over the world because they were promised the land of the Palestinians that is not theirs, and also they were promised above all the security and the protection. When they lose the security and protection and they see the army and the government cannot protect them, then there is no reason for them to remain. So for the first time, they had tents built in Eilat, 150,000 tents that the Israelis never seen before. And they went there from the Lebanese borders, 50,000, and from the envelope of Gaza, seeking refuge and internally displaced. What is the meaning of the Israelis to remain in Israel and create this nation that cannot be protected? That is the point. The second point is more important than that. Not only the Palestinians managed to come out and defeat the Gaza division, defeating the army that was terrorizing Gaza for many years, face to face, killing 300 of them and capturing at least four generals. That means a lot because it means face to face, the resistance has the strength to face this vulnerable army because we heard a lot about this invincible army. So they broke the image of the Israeli army, its pride, and its the significance of its resistance, of the presence. Therefore, now the Israelis are left with the bombing. This is why they are bombing Gaza from afar. This is why they have bombed with equivalent of 20,000 tons of explosives. This is what they are saying, when an atomic bomb is equivalent to 15,000. And when they are afraid of advancing slowly into the north of Gaza, afraid of engaging with the Palestinians. From the first day, they've lost 23 officers and soldiers, and also they're advancing after carpet bombing all the civilian area, including the hospitals. So we understand that the image of Israel has been broken into pieces, and this is why the Israelis are behaving so brutally in a genocidal way against the Palestinian civilians because they want to kill as many civilians as possible to turn the population against the Palestinian resistance once the war is going to end. However, they're not going to achieve their promised objectives to liberate all the captives and to eliminate Hamas.
Julie Qasem, hopefully we've got you back now. We can go back to the question that we had for you earlier about comments made by Seyed Hassan Nasrallah that the U.S. is responsible for the bloodshed. Please elaborate on that for us.
Yeah, so U.S. imperialism is the primary material contradiction, not only in theory, but in practice. It's definitely plays out in the Arab world and in how the Lebanese resistance and the Palestinian resistance are engaged against the Zionists. And, so the Zionist entity could not, all of its weapons, all of its armaments, all of its tools and funding that's used to wage this brutal genocide against Gaza are through American weapons. As it was mentioned, Americans, they don't want to be directly engaged against Hezbollah nor risk that. The Zionist entity does not want to directly engage with Hamas. These large, destructive U.S. weapons in order to create a sense of mass destruction just is the strategy-less approach here.
All right, let's go back to Mr. Elijah Magnier in Brussels. Mr. Magnier, one issue that has been getting a lot of attention and a lot of focus is the issue of accountability. There has to be consequences for the crimes that the Israelis are committing. Just earlier today, a convoy of ambulances was bombed by the Israelis outside the Al-Shifa hospital. Journalists are being targeted. 38 journalists have been killed since this war started. What about the accountability for these crimes? What about the issue of consequences that the Israelis should face with regards to all the death and destruction that they've laid upon the Gaza Strip? Given the unequivocal support of the likes of the United States, how can this status quo ever change?
It can't. The Israelis killed 101,000 Palestinians since 1948 until today. They have taken the land and gave 2% of Palestine to the Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank, and every day they break into the West Bank and they bomb Gaza, or they surround Gaza. Every day the violation of the right of the Palestinians, when the German government came out for the first time and said the Israelis as an occupation force has the obligation to defend the occupied Palestinians. Now, when Secretary General, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres came out and said this is not the question of the 7th of October, it is a question of 50 years of injustice against the Palestinians, he was asked to resign. Why? Because there is no accountability for what Israel is doing. Because Israel belongs to the American club and its allies, where everything is permitted. Going to Afghanistan, destroy Afghanistan, spending $2.3 trillion, killing hundreds of thousands, going to Iraq, invade Iraq against the United Nations resolution, and killing 1 million Iraqi, going to Syria, going to Libya, all that in violation of international laws and human rights, committing crimes against humanity, and there is no accountability. So we do not expect for Israel to be accountable, because everything is permitted for Israel under the term of defending itself, where according to the law, Ariel Sharon 2001 said Israel is an occupation force. It was later reinforced by the Israeli government and saying we are an occupation force, and an occupation force has no right to defend itself. The occupier, according to the United Nations Charter, Article 4, has a right to defend itself against the occupation forces. Nevertheless, always the occupier is blamed, and the occupation forces are supported by the international community because it belongs to the same club. So if you are under the umbrella of the United States, everything is permitted and there is no accountability to expect.
So based on what you just said, we turn again to comments made in tonight's speech by Said Hassan Nasrallah, that resistance is the only viable option left for Palestinians. Please elaborate on that for us. That is definitely a notion that has been echoed by experts time and time and again, that resistance right now is the only viable option for Palestinians. Mr. Magni, that was for you.
Yes, thank you. Well, it is not the word of Said Nasrallah. It is the word of the United Nations that permit the resistance that to be the only option against the occupation forces. If we take the German Nazi who occupied Europe and came to France and Belgium and all the European countries, they had the right to attack and kill and defeat the occupation forces. That the United Nations gave this right to the resistance, it is exactly the same right of the Palestinians in Palestine. Okay. This is why Hamas expressed itself in this way, to say this is our right to defend ourselves, and this is what Lebanon is doing when it's defending its occupied territory on the Lebanese borders.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Magni. Let's get a final thought in from Ms. Julia Qasim before we wrap up the show. Ms. Qasim, give us your thoughts on the matter that we were just talking about as resistance being the only viable option left for Palestinians right now.
Well, one, that was a very important point that it's enshrined in the UN Charter, as every occupied nation has a right to resist. Every occupied people has a right to resist. But also, it's not just a point of morals, but it's a point of material necessity. One, occupying power like the Zionist entity has only established itself by violent force. And as we can see throughout history to today, to the expansion of the illegal settlements, it does not operate on any sort of law, whether that's religious law, whether that's liberal, humanitarian, international law. It's completely in a law context of lawlessness, establishes itself and advances its interests by war crimes. It's a living, continuous war crime. Armed resistance becomes an absolute necessity when the demands of the Palestinians and the strategy of the Palestinians and all those oppressed and occupied by the Zionist entity have failed diplomatically.
Sure.
You know, the attempt to engage with this issue diplomatically constantly, time and time have failed. Arabs and the Palestinians forced into concessions that ultimately benefits the West and benefits the Zionist entity. Israel continuing its war crimes. That has been the course of history since 1948. Resistance is the only material solution in addition to diplomatically enshrined right.
Okay, thanks a lot. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Journalist and political analyst